Revelation chapter 21, we're going to dig in a second. But if you're like me, sometimes you're in conversations with people and people make a bold statement. And sometimes if you're like me, sometimes I wonder how serious that individual is about that bold statement, right? Are you really serious? Are you not serious? I want to see what's going to happen over time to see if you're going to make good on the thing that you just said. For example, typically in the fall in Northeast Ohio, my guess is this probably happens to about 50 people every week. But 50 people every week, I'm speculating, will make a bold declaration that they will, quote, never watch another Browns game again, end quote, right? And it happens on Sundays, Sunday evening, Sunday night, because you saw another game and it was another train wreck and you're just ready to be done with the Browns. And people say, I'm never going to watch another Browns game again, right? And when they make that bold declaration, I'm wondering, how serious are you, right? Because here's what I know to be true for most of those 50 individuals that boldly declare, I'm never watching another Browns game. Next Saturday evening, they're going to get a call from somebody, and the call's going to go like this. Hey, the Browns are starting a new quarterback tomorrow, and I'm getting wings. Come on over. Let's watch the game. You know what they're going to do? 50 out of 50 are going to go to see the new quarterback, eat the wings, and watch the Browns, right? Sometimes we make bold declarations about things, but there isn't a shelf life to it. We're not really committed sometimes to the things that we say, and some things we say we shouldn't be committed to. But that's another story, all right? So, but you have to ask the question sometimes, I wonder how serious that person is when they said that thing. Okay, if you remember when we started out this year in January, the first passage we looked at was in Matthew in the Sermon on the Mount where Jesus teaches his disciples to pray. And this is one of the lines, this is where we launched this year, Thy Kingdom Come, this is where we launched it. Jesus said, guys, here's how I want you to pray. Regularly and rhythmically, pray in these kinds of ways. Pray, Father, thy kingdom come, thy will, meaning the way that things are and the way that things happen when you're in control, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. And Jesus makes a bold declaration that God is intent on his kingdom coming here. And his will happening unhindered here. Just like it is in heaven, he wants it to happen here. Amen. And then the question, I guess, is I want to ask this. Okay, God, how serious are you? Are you kind of serious? Are you serious? The answer to that question, we're going to dive into over the next 5 weeks. And here's a teaser for you. He's very serious, about as serious as one can get, about his kingdom coming and his will being done here as it is in heaven. Today we begin a new series entitled All Things New. And indeed, he is in the process of and one day will make all things new. What are those things? Let's dive in. Revelation chapter 21, starting in verse 1. This is a vision that John the Apostle gets, and he documents it for us as the Spirit of the Lord told him to do for our blessing. Revelation 21:1. John says, Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth. For the first heaven and the first earth had passed away. And the sea was no more. Okay, let's dissect this a little bit. When John says he sees a new heaven, what does that mean? Because in church circles, oftentimes you hear heaven talked about a ton, and you wonder, what does that mean? Well, in this verse, I'm going to tell you what John means here. When John says heaven, here's what he means. Go outside and look up. Heaven here literally means the sky. The clouds, the blueness, the moon, the stars, the cosmos that is the expanse of the sky above us, that's what John means. In the beginning, God created the heavens, the exalted expanse of the sky, and the earth. So when John says, "Behold, I saw a new heavens," he's seeing new clouds, new sky, new sun, new stars, new cosmos up there, right? That's what he's seeing. And he sees a new earth. In the word new, and John had several different words for new in the Greek language that he could have chosen, but he chooses one specifically here. It's the word kainos. Kainos, in its raw, rugged form, means fresh, or fresh in an unprecedented kind of way. So John says, "Then I saw a unprecedentedly fresh heaven and a refreshed earth, for the first had passed away." Now, let me make an illustration here to help us understand what he's saying. If I told you that today, right, special deal for everyone, congratulations on coming to church, because everyone who walks through those doors, now, when you go home today, you're going home to a new house. God is making you a new kainos, new house. There's two different ways we could understand that. One is the correct way and one's the incorrect way. Here's the incorrect way that we could understand God is making you a new house that you're going to go home to after this service. Here's the incorrect way, right? You're going to go out, you're going to get in your car. Instead of turning right, you're going to turn left because you're going to a new place. And instead of going south, you go north, and then you arrive in this place, this driveway, and you pull into this house you've never seen before and never stepped in before, right? That would be a new house, but it wouldn't be a kainos house. It would be a neos kind of house, but not this word. That's not what John's saying. John's not saying that you're going to a totally new place you've never been to before. Here's what John is saying. I'm going to make the illustration. You're going to a new house on the way home today. You're going to walk out to your car. You're going to get in your car, and you're going to pull out the same way that you pull out every Sunday. And you're going to go home the same way that you've gone home every Sunday. And you're going to pull into the same driveway, and you're going to look at the same house that you've seen every single day that you've gone home from here, from church. But there's going to be a difference about that same house. This is the correct way. This is what John is saying. That house you're going to go home to is new, meaning it's been refreshed in an unprecedented way. So when you pull into the driveway, it's like a newly paved driveway. And you see your garage, it's a new garage that you're looking at. And you walk into your house, well, the first thing you notice, well, I got a new roof on there. And I got new siding. And you walk in, you see a new kitchen, redone kitchen. You got a new bathroom, new paint job, new floors, like new interior, new design. And it's, right, and God did it. And everything that God does is like, wow, this is a new house, right? It's the one that you're accustomed to, but it's so refreshed that it's new. Right? That is what John is saying when he says, "I saw a new heaven and a new earth." The heavens and the earth, when God makes all things new, are getting a makeover unlike there's ever been in the universe. He's going to refresh this earth and these heavens in an unprecedented way. Now, and then he says here, "And there was no more sea." When John says this, he's not making a statement of geography or topography. So in new heavens and new earth, we're going to refer to that from now on as new creation. New creation is new heavens and new earth. It's just a simpler way to say it, right? But for those of you guys, when you hear that there's no sea, some of you guys love the beach. And you're thinking, how can we have a refreshed, refurbished, in an unprecedented way, heavens and earth, if we don't have an ocean to go to, right? So here's the deal. John is not saying that there isn't going to be an ocean. What he's saying is, in figurative language, is that the new heavens and the new earth, new creation itself, is going to be holy. Right, because in Revelation chapter 13, verse 1, we see this thing called the beast arising out of the what? Out of the sea. And the beast arises out of the sea, because that's his abode, and then he declares war on and opposes the things of Jesus. And for the Jewish people, Old Testament-wise, the sea was a place of evil and danger and chaos, right? So figuratively speaking, John says it is going to be a holy, clean place where there's no resistance to what God is doing. It's going to be incredible. Now, we ask the question, Jesus, you told us to pray, thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. How serious are you? Well, he's serious enough that in the end of all things, he's going to rehab planet earth and the heavens above. He's going to deal with sin, and it's going to happen where? Here. Okay, and we're going to see the same thing in verse 2. And I saw the holy city, the new Jerusalem, doing what? Coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. What in the world is Jerusalem? Well, Jerusalem is God's capital city. And God has plans for planet Earth, and it starts in Genesis 1. It takes new form in Genesis 3. It ramps up in Genesis 12. But God has always had plans for what he wants to do on planet Earth. And then once his people Israel were established, the people through whom his blessing would be channeled to all of creation and to all peoples, right? Genesis 12, 1 through 3, Abram, I choose you and the Israelites, and I will bless the whole world through you. God set the Israelites up in the promised land, Canaan, and set the capital to be Jerusalem, where God would reign from through his people, so his blessings would fill and cover the earth. So Jerusalem is what? It is God's capital city. It's the place from which he reigns, and all of his good purposes and good plans channel out into everything else. So John says, I saw the holy city, the new Jerusalem. And the word new there is what? It's the same word as verse 1, kainos. New, meaning it's a fresh in an unprecedented way, Jerusalem. It's not like the old Jerusalem that was mired in sin and dysfunction and patterns of brokenness and idolatry. It's not like the Old Testament Jerusalem that we read about for 1,800 years or so. It is a refreshed and new Jerusalem that comes down, right? The Jerusalem that we saw, the writer of Hebrews would say something like this, the Jerusalem we saw was a copy of the true Jerusalem that God dwells in, and what's going to happen to that true Jerusalem? It's coming here. It's coming down. How serious is God about his kingdom come, his will being done on earth as it is in heaven? About as serious as you can get. New Jerusalem's coming here, right? That's happening, right? All right, and just I'm just saying what John said. Now, John's going to say it again, so don't get mad at me for making the same point, because John, through the Spirit of God, is going to make again the same point. So I'm going to make the same point. Verse 3, and behold, he says, and I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, behold, the dwelling place of God is with man. He will dwell with them, and they will be his people, and God himself will be with them as their God. All right, so John hears this voice coming from the New Jerusalem where God is, and the voice says that the dwelling place of God is with man. Now, when I was a kid, and I came up to my mom and I presented a request. And I say, Mom, can I go to LeBron's house to play basketball? Right? If I make that request, my mom is going to say yes or no. But the yes or the no that she is going to answer is going to be it's going to be answering the question of, can I, Brian, get up and walk out of my house, go to LeBron's house and play? Right? Because that's the language that I used. And she's going to say yes or no. If I say, hey, Mom, can LeBron come over to our house to play? She'll say yes or no, but it's going to be a yes or no to this because of the words I used. I'm asking if LeBron can leave his house, walk, drive, whatever. I'm in third grade, right? So he's going to walk over. I'm asking if he can come over to my house and in our place, if we can play there, right? And depending on the words that I use, she's going to know, am I asking, can I go there or can he come here, right? And in the same way here, right, the dwelling of God is with man. Am I going to where God is, or is God coming to where I am? The answer is, God is declaring he's coming to my house. He's coming to our house. He's coming here. That's where, when all things are made new, that's where it happens. Now, for years growing up in church, I was taught that we go to God. And we'll talk about that, I think, week 3 or 4. That does happen. It's just not the way it is for the rest of eternity, right? We're going to parse that out and dissect that. But what we need to know is that when God makes all things new, he's coming here. So when, again, Jesus prayed, taught us to pray, God, here's what we're proclaiming and asking of you, that you would bring your kingdom here, that your will would be done here. As it purely is in heaven, may it be done here. The question is, God, are you serious about that? The answer is as serious as you could get. I don't know if I understood that when I was a kid, because I kept hearing that we're going somewhere else. And that seemed to indicate to me that God was a little bit concerned maybe about what happened here, but not totally vested in the outcomes of what happens here. Well, John wants us to catch through the Spirit of God and the vision that God gave him that God is utterly committed to doing his renovation work here, that all things would bow the knee and obey him and walk in the beauty that comes from following him. Okay, now that we've established that, and we're going to unpack that in different ways for 5 weeks, so if that's a little bit confusing to you, then keep coming back because we're going to make sense of this. But if God is coming here, if God is coming to our house to play, to use the illustration, here's maybe a question. What happens when God comes over to play? What happens? Well, lots of things happen, but here's one thing for sure that I know. When God comes over to play, when he sets up camp and dwells someplace, things get real. Things get more real and not less real. Again, when I was growing up, I thought that like after I died, I couldn't conceive of what it was like, but it always seemed to me to be less real than more. But when God shows up, things get more real than less. Now, I want to illustrate that for us. I'm actually stealing an illustration from Pastor Joe that he used about a year ago. And it's so good, and it's so fitting, and it communicates the point so well that I have to use it. Okay, here's a bucket of water. A bucket of water right here. And I learned some lessons from this illustration at the 9 o'clock that we're going to apply here at the 1040. So if you want to see a service before we get it right, come to the 9 o'clock. Okay. I'm going to do it on the floor. Okay. Yeah. Okay, so I got a bucket of water here. Let's talk about when God shows up, things get real. Okay, so in the Old Testament, we continue to hear that God is glorious. Keith's already getting uncomfortable here, as you should. In the Old Testament, we read that God is glorious, right? The word for glory in the Hebrew Old Testament literally means weightiness, weightiness, substance, right? And so I've got two things here that are of different substance. One is a crumpled up piece of paper, right? And so this one has more glory than this one. More glory, less glory. And you can see that evidence when I take this less glorious thing and drop it into a bucket of water, not much happens. Keith, can you, I'm after you. Yeah, I want to get away from Ben's, okay, but also away from the speaker. Shoot, this was, all right, yeah. This was so bad that like I'm really nervous about this. Okay, okay, so now when I take the thing that has more glory, right, not much splash coming up from the paper, not so glorious. Now this, here we go, ready? Okay. Not as bad as the 9 o'clock. Okay. More glory. The brick is more real in what it does, right? When God comes, his glory comes down in a refreshed, rehabbed, in an unprecedented way, heavens and earth. God dwells here and things get more real because he shows up and because everything he does is real, right? Here's how C.S. Lewis was brilliant. Here's how he put it. He wrote a book called The Great Divorce, and he illustrated this point related to what new creation is going to be like. And you don't have to agree with the specifics of what he says, but what he says is so pointed in the point that it makes. He's not talking about the afterlife. He's just trying to make a point. Here's the point that he makes. In The Great Divorce, he says there's a group of people who are inhabiting hell, right? Horrible place. And the group of people that are inhabiting hell have been given an opportunity to take a field trip from hell on a bus, right? Probably like a 1930s English bus, from hell on a bus to go to new creation, to taste it and to see it. And we would think that everybody over here would be given high fives and like pumped about that because we finally get to get out of this place and go to God's place, right? But here's the thing about hell as Lewis describes it. Hell is a thin place. The people are wispy people. Hell is the place where actually people can't stand to be close to each other, and so they're constantly spreading out farther and farther and farther apart. And hell, over time, gets thinner and thinner and thinner and thinner over time, right? But so these thin people, key in on that word, these thin people, I'm just messing everything today. These thin people hop on a bus, and they get in the bus, and they start making the trip to new creation, right? And here's what happens. As they get closer and closer and closer, here's what they find, that the light that illuminates new creation is so light, it is so much more weighty in its lightness that it's too bright for them. Right? They're just uncomfortable. They're hiding their eyes because it is too bright for them. Right? And then when they pull up into new creation, they're breathing and they're like like coughing. Their lungs are in tortured pain. Why? Because the air is so thick. The air in new creation is more real. It is more weighty. It is more glorious than anything that they're used to, and their lungs can't handle it. And then they step up off the bus, and they take, step down as they're hiding themselves, and they're coughing because the air's so thick and the light's so bright, and they step on the grass, and they say, ow, ow, what in the world? What is that? Right? And then the tour guide says, that's grass. But the grass was so real, so glorious, and so weighty that it felt on their thin feet like pins and needles. And here's what happens. To a man, to a woman, they say, we're out of here. Back on the bus. And everybody gets back on the bus with their thin selves and goes back to the thin place because that's what they're accustomed to because new creation is too real for them. They can't handle it. When I was a kid, I was sitting in Sunday school one week, and the Sunday school teacher said, here's what we're going to do today, guys. They gave us a piece of paper and a pencil. They said, here's what we're going to do. We're going to draw heaven today. Go. Draw heaven. Draw it up. And as soon as I got that assignment, like, my heart immediately sank a little bit. Because I didn't know as a kid, how do you draw heaven? What is it like? Right, because here's what I had heard about heaven, the place that we go for all eternity after we die. I had heard that in heaven, it's just we sing forever. We sing forever. And now, the church that I grew up at, the songs that we sang for 20 minutes were not songs that I wanted to sing for 20 minutes. I'm sure somebody loved them, and that's great. Everybody's got their culture, right? I affirm that. For me, when I heard, we're going to sing praises to God forever, I'm thinking, I don't like doing that at all. And you're going to tell me I'm going to do that forever? I don't want to draw that. I don't know how to draw it. I don't want to. I don't want to think about that. That's horrible, right? And I thought, how do I draw heaven? Because here's what I've heard about heaven, that my soul goes there. Like, I don't know what it's like to be a soul. I know what it's like to be a soul in a body, right? I have a daily experience with that, but I don't know what it's like to be a soul without a body. How do you draw that, right? And so all the pictures that we have of heaven is of souls, whatever that looks like. We kind of draw them like our bodies because we don't know what else to make them look like, but they're souls wafting around on clouds singing. And I thought, oh, I don't want to do that in Sunday school. I don't want to draw that. It sounds horrible to me. So you know what I drew? I'm not kidding. I drew a water slide. Because I thought, I've heard about heaven, but here's what heaven should be like. What I've heard about it is lame. I take the water slide, right? So I drew a water slide. Now, here's what I've realized since my second, third grade year. As I've dug into the scriptures, as I feel like God has opened my eyes to see things that I had never seen and heard things that I'd never heard, what I see now is that God isn't going to take me away to someplace else that I have no context to understand. He's very clear. He's coming here. I know what here is like. I have had 41 years of a context to understand what living here is like. He's coming here, and he's going to make here unprecedentedly fresh and new and good and so excited to be living in. That's what he's going to do. He's declaring it. He's declaring it as clearly as we can possibly have it declared. So now, you know what? I used to hate thinking about heaven. It wasn't compelling to me at all. But since I've had this renaissance, this revolution of understanding what's going to happen when God makes all things new, I love talking about new creation. Right? If you step in, like if you just want to come live with my family for a month, you're welcome to. Clear it with Megan. She'll get you on the schedule. You will find us fairly regularly having conversations about what new creation will be like. Our kids we're engaged in the conversation. I wonder if in new creation, blah, 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 blah. I wonder if fruit will taste, or what kinds of fruit there will be in new creation, or what kind of animals are going to be in new creation, right? We'll just speculate in a wondrous sort of a way what it's going to be like when God makes all things new, which I can do and my kids can do because they understand what it's like to have a body and to live in a place as a person. We get it. And that's what God is going, he's going to remake this place. So now, man, I get pumped about it. I get excited about it in a way that I never, ever could. So life in new creation, when he makes all things new, the vision that John catches a glimpse of, life is like we understand it here, but so new and so much more. And it is new, and it is so much more in large measure because God, in all his weighty glory, comes here and sets up camp here in ways that he has not yet done. And we'll talk about that in a couple of weeks. Actually, I think next week. So excited. God comes here in all of his glory. And then verse 4. He will wipe away every tear from their eyes, and death shall be no more. Yes. Neither shall there be mourning, nor crying, nor pain any more. For the former things have what? Have passed away. Everything has been made freshly new. Now, I don't know about you, but this gets me to the place where I say, in my prayers, I say, God, thy kingdom come. Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. That's our hope. That's what he's serious about. Let's pray. Father in heaven, thank you that you are serious about doing your good work here. So serious that you're going to bring all of your weighty glory into this place. And God, we look forward to that day. We speed that day. We trust you and your timing on you bringing that day. But God, we're thankful that you're serious. You weren't joking around. You weren't messing around. You weren't just being hyperbolic in the moment. You meant it, and you're going to follow through on it. Thank you that we can trust you with that. And Father, I do pray that you would flood into our minds and our hearts a sense of expectation and hope that comes through the difficulties of this life, knowing that you are not done. You are not done, and you are going to finish the job. You're the only one that can finish it. And so we praise you and we lift you because you're worth it. You are weighty and you are worth it. We love you. It's in Jesus' name we pray. Amen.